You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, Launch Street, Tamara here. So I have a question. How many of your ideas, or even your team's ideas, get trapped on paper? Or maybe they get shut down before you can even move them past theory. I think there's a challenge in here that a lot of us face. And I talk about this a lot in innovation. I think there's this chasm between theory and reality, and really between kind of the conference room and paper and reality, where I think on paper, the greatest ideas look crazy. But if you look at the ones we reward in real life, they're usually those exact same ideas. I've talked about how Tough Mudder looked crazy on paper, the extreme sports competitions, that in fact, the professors of the business competition that the founders put it into said it would never work because the most innovative ideas look crazy on paper. But in the real world, things like Tough Mudder are billion-dollar ideas. So the chasm between theory and reality. So today, I brought another guest that can help us bridge that chasm. Before I introduce him, this podcast is brought to you by Brility Digital, business growth strategists who examine your company and its challenges in order to utilize the appropriate digital resources and tools to move your company forward. The thing to know, by the way, and I think I've said this before, is that they have a free digital assessment that they are giving to Launch Streeters, to all of us. So I would go click on that link. It's in the show notes. And I would take that digital assessment, whether you are a brand big or small. I promise you, it'll be worth your time. Okay. That's our awesome sponsor. Now on to our guest. Andre Philip is the founder and CEO of ELA, Everything LA, a global creative advertising agency headquartered in Los Angeles. He founded ELA in 2004 to capture the spirit, the culture, and the vibe, and really the attitude of LA where great creative ideas are born, but to spread that out really across everywhere. He oversees all aspects of the agency, including creative, business strategy, culture, client service, and operations. And he has played an integral role in expanding the agency's global presence for leading brands, including TikTok, Disney, Easter Seals, Pepsi, Thermador, and Western Digital. So he's kind of a creative visionary with a strong business acumen. And he has more than 15 years of experience that expands clients like HBO, Disney, Starbucks, Paramount, Universal, EA Games, NASCAR, Showtime, 20th Century. I think you get the point. But one of the things that he's really keen on is moving ideas into action and what steps you need to take to get there, which is why we're having him on today. So let's do this. Andre, thank you so much for joining me today. I think this is going to be a pretty robust conversation.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you for having me.
All right. I have to know, what's your first memory of being innovative?
That is a very, very good question. So my first memory of being innovative was actually when I was about 8 years old, and I told my parents that I wanted to start a lawn mowing company. And so what I did was I actually had my parents make me business cards that said that I was the president, and I had a little had a little logo on there, and it was great. And what I did was I literally went door to door and to neighbors around the entire block and then other blocks, and I went and told people I would mow their lawn for $20. And that was my first. Yeah, it was really cool. And long story short, not only did I start doing that, but I actually had my first employee, which was my neighbor. And I got him to help me. So he would do the edging of the lawns and I would mow and it would be great. And that was my first innovation in business that I ever started.
Now, I just have to share. So my son, he's 14 now. He was 13 at the time. He started a weed pulling business in the neighborhood where it's all old houses with a lot of weeds. And he learned some really valuable lessons, some things he did well, some things he didn't do well, and had to figure out some customer service lessons. Do you think you got some of those kind of business lessons along the way too?
I do. I think that what I got was I didn't take the 100 no's personally because I was just going after the one yes. Mm-hmm. And so I had people that were just rejecting me. And I mean, they had lawns and I thought I can mow them. And they just said no after no after no. And at a young age, I didn't take it personally. And I think that really stuck with me throughout my entire life, is that rejection is par for the course, and it's part of of getting to where you want to go. And it doesn't mean that you're not good, and it doesn't mean that you don't have something that people want. It just means that that particular person doesn't need what you're offering. And I think that was a lesson, looking back now and you asking me that, is something that stuck with me.
What a great lesson in all aspects of life. I mean, that's just incredible to think about, that it's not a no, it's a we're not a fit. And that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally fine.
That's super cool. Yeah. So I want to start actually with something that I read on your website, your business website, ELAs. And you can talk a little bit about what ELA, just kind of overall with what you do. But this quote really stuck with me, so I kind of wanted to dig into this. It said, "We question everything because the friction of allowing a concept to crumble creates something bigger than itself." In your view, what makes friction so important to innovation? Just talk to me a little bit about that quote, because I found it really fascinating. And I'm a big fan of friction and conflict. And it's one of those things in innovation in particular that I think we accidentally or mistakenly avoid.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you asked that question. So we question everything. That's really the ethos of what we do as a company. And let's elaborate here. So, you know, we are an advertising agency. We're an ad agency. We have clients that come to us to solve very, very complicated problems. They could be business problems, communication problems, but we have to invent desire and create desire for someone to purchase a product or to have an experience. And when you start questioning why someone is asking you to do something or the tactic, you start getting to very, very, very deep conversations. So for example, I consult with companies and I look at them from an operational perspective and I say, why are you doing things this way? And the answer is always, this is how we've always done it. And so I always question motives. I question why we do things. I want to break things. I don't look at things on how they can work, because if we all look at things on how something will work, then it's kind of it's too I don't want to say easy, but it flows in a way that you're not looking at what can happen on the negative side. So I always question, like, why do you want to do a commercial? Why are we saying this? Why would anybody even care? And I look at new businesses, startups, and very successful businesses the same way. I break the business model, or I break what they're asking me to do. And it's so important, because only once I can break down a problem can I see the pieces. So think about it as like really hovering above, and you got to be able to see everything, but you can't see it when it's in one unit. You got to break things down. And you do that by questioning the status quo, by questioning what's being asked of you, by questioning the very foundation that a business is built on.
So, okay, we're going to geek out on challenging kind of assumptions and questioning things for a second, because this is, to me, is a really important thing. You know, and I think that there are explicit and implicit assumptions, right? They're the ones that are obvious. And then there are the ones that are they're like the invisible glue in our businesses that we don't even realize are holding us back from being innovative or moving forward or having the right solution. How do you, and maybe it's because you're an outsider coming in, but what's your advice for people in that questioning to not just do the obvious ones, but to figure out how to question those assumptions or ways that we're just so set in, we don't even realize it?
I think the spirit of it is to be curious. And I think the curiosity, so it's not questioning for questioning's sake, it's questioning to get to a discovery that's bigger. And here's the craziest part of all this. You actually don't know where this is going. You're on the bleeding edge of discovery, which is innovation. You don't know where the questions are going. I have no clue. I mean, in we joke internally. It's like we have no idea what we're doing, because we're inventing something that's net new. And the way you create something that is net new is by fundamentally just being curious and digging into those little grooves. And going down the rabbit holes, you know, people say, no, let's not go down that rabbit hole. I champion rabbit holes. Let's go down the rabbit hole for the next 2 hours, because, you know, and that is, and again, that sits, but what sits above that is questioning the status quo, questioning why do we have to do things in a certain way. So I believe in questioning from a place of being truly curious to learn. And really what you're doing is you're mining for data, you're mining for information. You're questioning not because you're trying to break it for breaking its sake, but you want to be in a better place than where you ended up.
I mean, you're breaking it to your point so you can see all the pieces. And right, I mean, that's kind of, it's not to break it apart, to ruin it. It's to
Correct.
See it differently.
to see it differently. And yeah.
And I think all too often we ask questions because there's actually a path we want to go down. Like we have an answer actually to the question mm-hmm. we're asking, or we have mm-hmm. a path. And what mm-hmm. I hear you saying is to ask questions where you truly do not know the answer. I mean, I was in a meeting earlier and I was just thinking as you were talking, like, I think I asked questions that I knew the answer to, or I wanted to get to a certain answer to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a saying, which is, you know, how can you step into someone else's shoes while you're still wearing your own? You have to completely get rid of your ego. And I think as marketers, you know, what makes a good marketer is it's not about whether I'm the audience. I'm probably not the audience for 90% of the products that I represent and sell. But I have a unique ability into stepping into the shoes of the audience and releasing myself, my assumptions. Yeah. And so part of questioning everything is you got to leave assumptions out the door, to your point. You can't come in there with knowing where you want to steer this. You can't come at it with anything but humbleness and curiosity to try to create something. And the only way to do it is by questioning, asking, and then seeing what are the patterns here? What are we building on? And you're going to get those nuggets out of people. It's just getting to know the psyche of the person and the problem that's in front of you.
You know, so I have a 10-year-old son as well, and we don't have cable. Everything we do is streaming, like a lot of families now. And we were up at this Airbnb, and the short of it is it had cable, and he was watching TV, and he was super annoyed because it had commercials. He was watching Cartoon Network or something, which was like a boondoggle for him, right? He was like, oh my God, vacation. But there's a shoe company that was very well known that had their shoes constantly show up in those commercials. And when we were shopping later, a couple weeks later, I saw those shoes in the store, and I thought they were cool. So I asked him if he wanted to try them, and he like had a totally adverse reaction to the shoes because they, in his mind, they got in the way of his TV show because he's not used to having to deal with commercials. And in that moment, I was just thinking to myself, it's exactly what you're saying. Like, had that team of people thought about their target market a little bit deeper and questioned a little bit more, they probably wouldn't have spent that money on those commercials. They probably would have done it somewhere else.
Yeah. And that's a good point. You know, I always, it's funny, I'm in a room of marketers every single day of my life. And sometimes we forget the consumer, which is ironic because that's all we're doing.
Right.
But I ask
we
them,
all do.
I mean, and you guys are consumers. I look at them and say, if you saw this, would you click on that? No. Right. Then why would you expect them to do it, right?
Right. Totally. You know, totally.
That's the funniest part about this. It's like, well, I wouldn't do it, but I expect someone else to do it. So I think you got to get emotional about it and say, you know what, if I were this person, you know, or if I were driving down the freeway and I always look again at the worst case scenario, I had a bad day. I'm super tired. I'm driving down the freeway and I look at a billboard. Okay, cool. And you want me to do what? You want me to read it?
Right.
And you want me to go home and rush to my computer and look you up right now? That's the silliness of it. You got to take it down to the ridiculous. And then people go, ah, you're right. Maybe we don't want to do that. Or maybe we want to say it in a different way. So to your point, it's the right mix to the right people at the right time. If they would have known, if they would have done a little bit digging deeper, I think that they probably would not have done that. And that would have been a dollar better spent.
Without a doubt. And I would say just for all of us listening to, you know, Andre, you were talking about like sometimes we forget the customer, the consumer, depending on what you call yours, even though that's what all of us do all day. Ultimately, is we serve our clientele, whether that's a consumer in a store, or, you know, a B2B service. But I think we all do it because we end up three steps removed from them somehow, you know, like we're doing our day to day, especially with consumer goods. I mean, really, they're selling to a distributor, going to a retailer, going to the consumer. So it's so easy for us to forget who we serve. And I think there's a lot of innovation in the emotion and in that empathy that you were just talking about.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, for nowadays in my world, you know, we can't sell anymore. We have to align. And to align is to think about it as a relationship, right? You go out on a date. You meet someone, you get to know them a little bit, and you find out, okay, I'm aligning with them. I like this. I want more of this. But it's not intrusive. It's not pick me because I'm a really cute guy and I think we should date and I think we're going to have a great time at Disneyland. That's not what it is.
I don't know. You had me at Disneyland, Andre. I'm not sure.
I know. That gets them every time. But you know, you got to kind of imagine they're living their life. And our job is not to beat them over the head. Our job is to kind of stand next to them, walk side by side with them, and show them that we have similar interests. The brand role.
Can you give us a little bit of a how-to on how you think differently about sell versus align? Because I think that's very powerful, whether you are selling to your leadership or selling to your customer. But how does that change maybe how you do things a little bit, or the questions you ask?
I think that's a very big question. So there are, as we create tactics around people, we have to understand that need state and where they are consuming this information. So for example, in the Airbnb with your son, right? That yeah. wasn't a place where he wanted to be sold shoes to. Had it right. been in a theme
Minecraft
park
YouTube video?
whatever it would be, then maybe he would have maybe taken a different affinity to those shoes and maybe looked at them in a different way. So I think that we need to understand what is that human being mindset. And it's almost like storytelling in a movie. There is a backstory to that person by the time they are doing what they're doing. So if they're driving or if they're sitting at home or whatever they're doing, we need to understand their mindset, and we need to understand how we can kind of, instead of hard selling them and say, buy this product now, we have to understand that people are going on Instagram, on Facebook, and online and doing their research, and they want to understand a little bit more about the company, a little bit more about the product. So we need to kind of surround the consumer with information that they care about. And so the second part of that is one of the parts of questioning, to your point and the spirit of all this, is are we talking to ourselves about ourselves, or are we talking to the consumer about what they care about? Because a lot of companies love to talk about how great their product is, but they miss that small little bridge, which is, this is what it does for you. Because that's all we care about. I don't care about the backstory of why this little gizmo gadget thing is like all the years it took you to create it. What I care is, what's it going to do for me? And right. so that is very critical.
So, we've been talking a lot about the front end. I want to move to or take it through to the action side of it. So, and it's a little bit of another trap, I think, of, kind of that first trap being not challenging assumptions and not breaking things, as you said. But the second one is, I think ideas often get trapped in theory land, right? Great in the conference room, maybe even on a PowerPoint. But you're really good at moving ideas from theory to reality. So how do you do that?
So that's such a big deal to me in my daily life. I see so much theory in this world, from self-help to businesses to everyone knows what good and amazing looks like. I sit in meetings where people theorize all day long and they talk about what they want to do, but they don't actually do it. They just sit in theory land.
So, it drives me nuts too, by the way.
Yeah, it boggles my mind. It's like, I get it, but when are you going to do it? And it's like, right. How about now? There's this procrastination, because I think it's perfection paralysis. Everyone just wants to think about it and theorize it. It's probably from the very scholastic background that many people have about planning and thinking about it and all the different things that can go right and wrong, but nothing beats action. I have a saying, you jump off the cliff and you grow wings on the way down. You just do it. So no amount of theory is going to be better than the actual action, and maybe getting a little and maybe failing a little bit. But it's very safe when things are in PowerPoint and in meetings. Everyone is in a safety zone, because it's like a schoolyard. Everybody motivates each other. You tell each other how smart you are. Maybe there's a little conflict, but the conflict is all in good faith. But nobody wants to stand there and take the action and be that man in the arena that is falling and has to get up 10 times. And that, to me, is based on fear, criticism, failure, and what if this doesn't work? And maybe it won't, but the theory part is where life happens. I mean, I'm sorry, the action part is where life happens.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. I have so many things swirling in my head. First of all, man in the arena might be one of the best quotes ever. So if you haven't read it out there, go just type in Man in the Arena quote and you'll find it. It's fantastic. Also, I was just laughing a little bit. So your innovator archetype is collaborative risk taker. I'm also a risk taker. I'm risk taker experiential, but that's where we overlap. And one of our things is we're willing to leap off the cliff, right? And kind of build as we go, not impulsively. Like we're strategic about it, but we're willing to do that and figure it out along the way. So you just, when you said jump off the cliff and grow wings, I was like, oh my God, he totally is a risk taker. You just said it. That's fantastic.
Hello, Launch Street. I am here once again with Derek, who is the president of Brility, and he's going to throw some wisdom bombs on us. So Derek, here's my question. As a president of Brility, you interact with clients across a whole range of industries. What have you seen across the industries are the biggest challenges facing business growth today?
Hi, Tamara. That's a great question. The biggest challenge, without a doubt, is a concept we refer to as liquid turf. The dynamic environment of business right now moves at an exceptional pace. We have technology that's changing. We have business forces that are changing. We have regulation, international competition. The rate and pace of change is dizzying. And then add to that a lack of time and money and resources. It's quite challenging right now.
So here's my question about that, though. I mean, wouldn't a smart strategy help you manage change?
That's exactly correct. What we find, however, is people don't really understand strategy. They have goals and aspirations, and they have a detailed to-do list and a plan. A strategy is something really between those two. I mean, it's interlocking concepts that have compounding effects that are based on research. And most importantly, Tamara, the strategy is a living, breathing thing. It needs to be dynamic and adaptive to the future. And that's where we come in with our digital approach. We build systems that adapt the strategy as the market changes, as we learn more, as your business objectives may expand or contract. That's really is the key.
So how does Brility, how does your company help solve those challenges for your clients?
That's another great question. We will sit down. We go over the objectives of the client as well as their current thinking and momentum. And then we do what's called a digital presence assessment, where we map out all of the different technologies and market forces that could inform our strategy on how to achieve those objectives. And we present the client with the options. And from there, we can collaborate and make informed plans and decisions, as well as a coherent action plan.
So Derek, this might be a naive question, but why is a digital platform so important to strategy and growth today?
Oh, that's a great question. It is the immediacy and the granularity of the feedback. We are able to learn so rapidly and adapt so rapidly if everything is set up correctly that the best way to keep up with the pace of the marketplace is both to grab opportunities as well as to handle challenges is through the digital platforms.
All right, Launch Street, I'm going to go, first of all, make sure that I have a dynamic strategy and not a set in stone goal. And I would hope that you would all do the same now that Derek has helped me understand the difference. Derek, thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you.
But the thing that I think is really powerful about what you're saying is, you know, in theory, everything seems good too. It's so comfortable to right. debate in theory. And it's, wouldn't you say it's less comfortable and maybe even extremely uncomfortable when you get into action?
Absolutely. I think that it's never going to get less uncomfortable. You just get used to it. Mm. And you get used to the feeling of living on the edge. And that's what life's about. That's where it happens. Innovation happens on the edge. On the edge of, I don't know what I'm about to do. And you know that adrenaline rush that you get if you're going in a roller coaster or in a car or whatever it is? That's the adrenaline rush you should be getting every day, because you're innovating and you're taking action. And part of that is fear of failure, absolutely. But once you fail 10 million times, you don't really care. It's part of the journey. And so I couldn't agree more. I think that boardroom philosophy is one thing. I think we need a lot less talking and a lot more doing.
I'm 100% with you. I mean, I think there's a huge chasm between like what happens in the conference room and in the real world. And I think the real unfortunate part of it is I think the most innovative, wildest, craziest ideas, they look just that in the conference room, right? They look crazy. They're so innovative, right, that a piece of paper can't hold it. And yet in the real world, they're the ones that we love, like Dollar Shave Club, subscription for razors, Tough Mudder, extreme sports where you get shocked. Like on paper, those look ridiculous.
So it's hard to, so you can't really judge an idea until you get into reality. So my question to you is, how do you do that with people? Let me ask it differently. How do I, if I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh, I might be a little bit stuck in, I think you called it perfection paralysis. If I'm stuck in that, how do I get out of it? And how do I get the people around me out of it?
You know, that's a good question. I think it goes back to, you know, you said something very, very interesting as our kind of innovator, you know, archetypes that we are, we are strategic. We know what we're doing, but we kind of don't, which is really interesting.
Yeah. It's like, well said.
And I know only you would know what I mean when I say that, right. And other listeners who are like that. It's like, I know what I'm doing ish. I kind of know what I'm doing. Right.
Ish.
So there's only so much planning, but I think that, you know, starting with the end and this is part of what we do as a business, right? Strategy. When we go into strategy, let's say a business strategy for 3 years, we start with what does year three look like? And then what must happen right before that at an annual level? And then what must happen right before that? So what I encourage people to do to get out of that rut of philosophy and get into action is it's kind of like if you knew the first step to take, you would have maybe already done it. So you probably don't know what to do next. I would look at what does great look like in the end, and then work back one step right behind it, right behind that, which will take you to this year, this quarter, this month, this week, today. And I think that, and then you start working toward it that way, because if you're sitting at the bottom of a mountain, looking at the very top and saying, how do I get there? You have no clue. I don't know, maybe my left hand's going to go here and my right hand's going to go there. There's so many ways that it can happen. You're going to end up sitting at the bottom of the mountain. How about this? Let's start climbing and you'll figure it out. So it's a combination. It's a balance between understanding the end, working your way backward, and then starting to take motion. And if you're okay, if you could just wrap your head around criticism, again, yes, Google man in the arena, but if you can wrap your head around, you will be criticized. You will feel stupid. You will feel ashamed. So what? Right? Yeah. If you could just have that attitude and move, then I think you're going to be in a good place.
Well, none of that lasts, right? If you think back to the last time you were ashamed, embarrassed, it didn't last. You don't feel that today, you know? It's like we kind of forget that, I'm pretty sure I felt all of those this morning. But But you said something really interesting that I just want to pause and ask about, because it's almost a different approach. You said, think about what great looks like at the end and then work backwards. And I think oftentimes we take the opposite approach. We say, okay, there's the mountaintop. I'm down here. It's up there. What's the first step I need to take moving forward? Or do you find that working backwards helps you actually take that first actual step, or am I misunderstanding?
Absolutely. 100%. Everything I do in my life and we do as an agency and really as an industry is we work backward. We have a launch day of a product that will be launching in let's say 30 days. So it needs to be, you know, final approved 2 days before that. So everything is back. We back out of everything we do. If we ever, if we would ever fail, it's because we're walking toward a goal, not away from a goal. And that is a life principle. You got to walk away from the end and then build a plan backwards. Don't build it forward, because forward is going to, again, trap you in the 20 different things that can happen at every single step. And that becomes, it's almost overwhelming. You need to almost chunk down your goal into bite-sized pieces that you can just do today.
Well, and what I also appreciate, there's two things I really appreciate about this that I want those of us on Launch Street to really hear. One is this idea of what does great look like? Not just what does the end goal look like? What's your vision? Like, we ask those questions all the time, but there's something about the word great that takes me to a really, a more sensory driven, profound, interesting place than just like, what is the end in mind? And I would venture to say that working backwards probably gives you even more clarity, because when you work forward, I'm guessing we probably go off the path more than we realize, and backwards, I think, would give us more clarity and confidence without getting trapped.
I think so. I think when you work forward, you're working with a lot of emotion, and that emotion is based in a lot of insecurities, a lot of fear, a lot of things that you don't want to do. Like, I don't really want to make that phone call because it's uncomfortable. And what if they don't answer and I look stupid? There's a lot of emotion and issues when you're working forward. When you're working backward, it's logic. I'm tapping into a different part of your brain. I'm just saying, if that's what great is, what must happen right before great, right? Yeah. And then what must happen before that and before that? And it's so logical. There's no hangups there. There's no fear. I'm just asking you logical questions like 1 + 1 = 2. Got it. Understood. Versus how do you get to 2? Oh my gosh, I don't know. There's so many ways I can do this. I can do that. I can divide.
Oh my gosh. No, you're right. Like if I know what the end goal is, the great is, and I work backwards, I know what I have to do because I know what the outcome of the next step is.
Right. And it's just logic. And sometimes we just got to get out of our own head and just act and don't think about it too much. Like I have a saying, I was asked this about a to-do list. I have a to-do list every single day. But I don't emotionalize or prioritize my to-do list because the moment you emotionalize it, you know what you're going to do. Nah, I don't really need to call that guy this week. I could call him next week. The moment you prioritize, suddenly the priorities are based on what you would like to do and what kind of feels good and comfortable and is in your kind of comfort zone. And that's how you really prioritize it. But when you unemotionalize your action and you just take action and trust yesterday's self that you were right. So going back to looking at what great is, you already mapped it out. Trust yesterday's self and just take action.
So how do you decide? Because it's so funny. I have a whole to-do list on the other page of, you know, taking notes with this discussion. How do I decide then what to do?
I don't think about it. I look at it as just stuff I need to do. I don't think about why I want to do it, why I need to do it, the outcome. I just don't even think about it. It's almost, and I hate to say it this way, it's a mundane task that you don't think about. You just say, I need to do this right now. It's such a weird muscle to exercise.
I sometimes do it based on time. Like I have 15 minutes before my next meeting and each thing takes 2 minutes. So I'll get that done. And then I don't know if that's a good, but I like what you're saying about like, hey, it's just a list. But this whole kind of working backwards and great is totally mind blowing. So that's what I'm going to do this weekend. That's what I want all the people on Launch Street to do. I want all of us to go figure out our great and then work backwards because that is super cool. It's so cool. I wanted to ask you because I was a little bit intrigued about one of your values, partially because I'm a big fan of personal accountability. And I think that you need that to be bold and to be innovative as well. I think you need to take ownership of your actions and what you do. And your value is no one is going to invite you to be great. What does that mean to you and why is that important for not just you, but for your company?
I think that a few things. One is there's that word again, right? No one's going to, the great word.
Yeah.
No one's going to invite you to be great is there's so much in that and it's so simple as well. I think that, you know, being great is something that we strive for every single day and in our company and as individuals. And I think that I encourage everyone listening to figure out what is greatness to you. And a lot of times people get very insecure about words like that because they feel like they don't want to be selfish and that's kind of a very pompous word. It's like, no, I want to go for greatness. And so should you and so should everybody else. But no one is going to invite you is the entrepreneurial part of it. You know, I think that people need either a group or a setting or someone to kind of give them the permission to pick up that phone, to start that business, to do that thing that they were wanting to do, or to get some assurance from somebody. And no one is going to give you that. I have news for you. No one's going to give you that. Sometimes, yeah, you might hear something and you might think like, well, I should do that. But at the end of the day, no one's going to fight for your brand, your product, your business like you will. And so the spirit of this is let's be great right now, not tomorrow, but right now. And what can we do to find our greatness every single day? And so that can mean picking up the phone and making that phone call you've been scared of making. That can be building that website and putting your neck on the line. That can be investing in that business or starting that thing or having that conversation with somebody that can lead you to something amazing. But it's the spirit of intense action now and doing it with everything you've got. And if you do that every single day, then the end result almost doesn't matter because now it's a journey thing, not an end result thing.
Love it. And I also hear you saying in that, that it's about you deciding to do that versus waiting for someone else to give you permission.
Yes. Anyone who's listening, guys, be a bull in a china shop. Step on toes. It's okay. That's what we believe in. there are so many formalities in this world right now, especially in the business world. Like, well, you know, I had to wait for this person to have a meeting. You know, there was 10 of us, but the 11th person had a dentist appointment. So we postponed the meeting for 1 month. What? Like, what are you talking about? You move. I thought I had to ask this person. No, if you want to get going in life, just freaking do it. And if people get a little bit offended, I'm okay with that. Okay, because at the end of the day, we're here to create something that's bigger than ourselves. And you're not going to do it by being, fitting in a perfect little box. You got to be okay with being a little bit of that bull in the china shop in your own way. And that goes back to don't wait for anyone to either give you permission or to set up a meeting or to be available. You move and you become the train that moves 1,000 miles an hour and everyone can jump on. Or not, but you don't slow down.
Okay, I love the intensity behind it too. Like, so great.
Yeah.
I'm so pumped about this. Yeah, I am. I really like what you're saying, and I'm glad that we're hearing it, and I think it helps alleviate too what we see, particularly when we're trying to be innovative or bold or that bull in the china shop. It's this whole me versus they, right? They don't get it. They don't understand. They. But what they really is an excuse not to be bold. I think.
Of course.
Right? Because you can blame it on them, whoever your they is. That was the worst sentence I've ever uttered out loud, but you know what I mean.
I totally know what you mean, yeah.
I'm curious, kind of wrapping this up into the bigger culture picture, I want to kind of ask this next question a little differently than what I jotted down prior, but how do you know if you've either got a vibrant and thriving culture where all of this is happening versus a toxic or low performing culture where it's not?
We as businesses, as groups of people, we start off pretty darn good. And whether that be in the year, in your business, and what happens is there is, and you know, you already put all these great things in place. You're super pumped. You're super stoked. You know what you're going to do. And you will, and you don't have the constant reminders there. And you have to be able to be relentless in your pursuit of your ideals and not allow bad behavior. Because when you do, it becomes, you go, I don't want to call that out. That's uncomfortable. I don't want to make that person feel uncomfortable. And it's kind of weird. I'm in a meeting. I don't want to tell them to stop looking at their phone. And the next thing you know, everyone's looking at their phone and no one's paying attention to meeting. You created that. That was your fault.
Right.
That was not their fault. I always take responsibility for everything around me. So the key to it is personal accountability, but keeping the people around you accountable to the ideal. But part of that is you've got to be really good at communicating what that ideal and greatness looks like and be able to, it's the constant repetition. It's the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning every single day in elementary school. It's the constant repetition of that thing. And when you don't do that, and the companies that I see that are broken are ones that have amazing ideals that don't keep them up. They know what great looks like. They just gave up somewhere along the way.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. I have so many questions. Where do I begin? Okay. So in the communication of that, kind of that part that what you were talking about, because that part to me seems really important. I think there's, like you said, oftentimes a plaque on the wall, but nobody's really taken the time to really say, this is how this shows up, right, in the day to day. So how does being great show up? How does integrity show up? How does taking risks show up? How do you think about translating kind of values into action?
Yeah, and I think that's part of, that gets into process. That gets into the actual practice of it. That gets into pulling out that ethos and the spirit of what you guys are trying to create in your company, in your group, and pulling that out into ways that you can actually apply it. Because again, even you and I are getting into philosophy right now, but it's action, and that's what you're talking about. How do I take action when it comes to a certain ideal, right? So one of our values is spirit of one. We are one company and we know that we are greater and bigger together. And so we absolutely are 100% collaborative. It's not about any one person taking credit. It is something that we put into the process of how we show up to meetings, how we review work on walls, how we communicate, and how we show up as a unit at all times. So that's a good example of taking one word and translating it into physical form through process and action.
You know, I worked at a consulting firm for a while. I was a vice president. And We were small. I think we were like 12 people. But the challenge we had was the president didn't want anything to do with having to deal with culture and all that. He was like, oh, Tamar, no, you're the outgoing one. You should manage it. But the reality is I did my best. But without the person at the top really saying, yes, this is what we're about, it didn't really work. And it felt like there was a constant struggle to get people on the same page. Like it was almost like it was an individual basis. Some teams did it phenomenally because that's who they were. And others didn't because, frankly, there was no. There was almost like a vacuum, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. And I think that, you know, again, I go back to the tree rots from the top. And at the end of the day, it's all my fault. So if I see it, I got to be able to fix it. And I absolutely think that leadership's role is not to pull the wool over your eyes and say, no, you guys deal with it. Of course, that's easy. But that's a very hands-off, old-school way of running a business, and I completely don't agree with it. I think that if you care about it, you got to be in it. You got to be able to walk those hallways, and you got to be able to keep people accountable. And I don't mean from a negative way. It's actually a place of creating a tighter group of people. And I guarantee you, the company that you're describing, they were probably pockets of people like cliques in a gang that were
clicky. Totally.
Yeah, of course. And I didn't even know that. How did I know that? Because you guys aren't one. Because the leader didn't create one company. He created five cliques that all kind of try to go do something. And that's the fault of leadership.
I think you nailed it when you were saying that like it shows lack of caring. So no matter how hard I worked to care, there was this uncaring on the other side of the teeter-totter that kept pulling us down no matter what, because he wasn't involved. Right. And I think if you're listening out there, well, obviously you're listening because you can hear us, but out there, you know, just remember that all of that, to your point, right? It's not somebody else's job. It's all of our jobs to really be on, particularly culture.
It is. It is. I think that, and that goes back to personal accountability. You show up doing the best thing, the best that you can. And if you're in a company that doesn't promote that in a way of leadership embodying that, again, it all starts from, it's like a strategy in business. You have to have a North Star. That North Star in a company is the leader and the brand ethos and the mission of the organization and how they move forward. And they're very singularly focused and they're very good at keeping the direction of the company going. And I like to say, you know, a lot of people in companies don't have a goal problem. They have a focus problem. Even the people listening, I guarantee you, if I could talk to them, everyone right now, they would think, no, I know exactly what I want. But they get distracted because when you see their life from 5 in the morning till 10 p.m. at night, trust me, they ain't doing just that one thing. And that's the problem. And the same thing with leadership. You got to figure out what's important to you and you got to be able to beat that drum every single day, not every single week, every single day.
So I want to bring it back to you for a minute. When you think about how you innovate, how would you describe that?
Oh my gosh, it's a combination of everything we've been talking about, from questioning to flying by the seat of my pants to I would say that at the end of the day, if I would say, it boils down to action and accountability. Yeah. And I think that's what it is. I think that's the spirit of everything you and I are talking about right now is action, 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 action. If we just let everybody let everyone off the hook for 30 days and said, you don't have to plan, you don't have to write, you don't have to think, you don't have to read, you should listen to this podcast. But other than that, you don't have to do anything. Just take action. I guarantee you. And then call me in 31 days. I guarantee you their life would transform because they would get out of their head because it's very heady in this world, very in the space of philosophy. When you start just taking any action you can every single day, not Monday, Wednesday, and then maybe Sunday morning, every single day, guarantee your life will transform.
I find that for me, and I'm guessing you're probably a little bit similar, I only give myself a couple seconds before I take action because if I take any more seconds, then I'll talk myself out of it. Like, oh, I'm not feeling well. Oh, it's not the day. Oh, I got to think this through. Like I could come up with a million excuses, you know?
Yep.
So it's almost like you know, it's like getting to the gym, right? Like if I just get there, that's all I'm asking. Just get there. And then of course, once you're there, you bust butt, you know, and you work out, but you have to actually get there. And it feels like this is the same way.
Absolutely. That was what we were saying earlier with that to-do list. Don't emotionalize it because you can talk your way out of anything. Like I work out every morning at 5 a.m. and that's part of my routine. Half the time I don't want to do it, but I don't give myself a way out.
Yeah.
You can rationalize your way. And this goes back to the problem in these board meetings. People can rationalize their way into doing or not doing anything. because I can build a case for not doing a lot of things. But that's not what we're here to do. We're here to stay very true to one course and show yourself that you can take a command and follow it every single day. And I think that's the new muscle that people need to exercise.
You know, I'm laughing a little bit because I also work out at 5 o'clock in the morning. So my alarm goes off at 4. So I can get up, let the dog out, get some coffee. But what I've come to realize about myself is that my decision to get up doesn't happen when the alarm goes off. It happens the night before. So if I go to bed and say, I'll see how I feel in the morning, I'll see if I get enough sleep, like anything that gives me an out, then that next morning I'm taking the out. So that 100%, night, yeah, I got to go to bed going, I'm getting up tomorrow. And it's that simple, because frankly, nobody at 4 o'clock in the morning feels great. And if you do, you're crazy. Like, you're not my friend. I get up and I'm groggy and I'm like, what's happening? You know, but that decision doesn't happen in that moment. It happens before that. In your work, what do you think stops people from innovating? What are the things that, and I think you talked a little bit, right, about the paralysis, about not taking action.
Yeah, I think not. First of all, you got to give yourself a little bit of a little time to dream. And that's part of my archetype in your assessment, right? Like, I can dream, and you got to give yourself a little bit of that time. You know, I try to take at least 1 hour a week and go to a local park and completely disconnect and dream and think and just be. And you know, people like to do that. You know, that's some people's version of going in the shower and singing, right? But you got to be able to think about new ways of doing things. And you unfortunately can't always do that when you're in the same environment every single day.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to break or change what's already there. Innovation is synonymous to me with entrepreneurship, which is creating something from nothing. And in order to create something from nothing, you sometimes have to ignore what is in order to think about what can be. So, you know, trying to do a Frankenstein of a house is probably not the best solution. How about we just tear it down and build something new? But by being in the same house every single day, you can't see what can be because you're trying to fix what's there. And I think that's true for relationships. I think that's true for business. And I absolutely think that's true for innovation.
Ah, well said. So I can't believe we're close to the end here. So where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Yeah. So our website, ELA1.com, ELA1.com.
And my last question for you is, although maybe I feel like we need to have you back because there's more that we didn't even get to. What's the first step we can take to be great today?
Oh my gosh. You know, I'm going to sound like a broken record on this particular one. I think it's believing in yourself and expecting the best. I think being great and bringing your A game is one thing. If you ask people what they want, and even those who take action, they will say, I know what I want and I'm taking the action. So I didn't get anything from this. And I would say, but if you got everything you wanted this week, how would you feel? Or do you expect to get it? Well, no, I don't expect to get it this week. What do you mean? Well, I mean, how could it happen this week? I'm so busy. I got all this other stuff to do. People don't actually expect to get what they're working for, believe it or not. I look at it as a coin. There's what you want, and there's expectation is on the other side. Start expecting greatness, and greatness will start coming to you. Because you, for example, I want a new client. What do you think? You're going to get a client this week? Well, no, I'm not. I don't know if it's going to happen this week. Why not? And so I would start expecting the results and working towards greatness. And those two things together, you're going to start seeing, A, that you don't expect amazing things to happen, which is a new thing you got to shift in your brain. And B, it'll completely transform how you wake up in the morning. It'll be a lot easier to take action when you actually expect things to work out versus expect them to not work out.
Someone said to me the other day, like, are you being unreasonable enough? Or are you accommodating other people? Which is a little bit kind of what you're saying here, of like, have those and have an expectation that things are going to happen. And sometimes it won't. But if you have the expectation that it won't happen, then it almost definitely won't.
Yeah. You definitely increase your odds.
Yeah. Well, Andre, thank you. So this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Here's my question to you. Are you taking the necessary steps to move ideas into action, or are you letting them get stuck in theory land? Here's the thing. I know we think we're moving into action, but what actually happens in theory land, in kind of on paper, is we let doubt, we let the critics, we let our fear of moving forward seep in, and it stops us. That first step into action is actually the scariest. I know in my work, I'm going to assess if I'm doing that or if I'm letting fear get in the way. But don't you worry. You know I'm not going to leave you hanging. So here's what I want you to do to help move you into action and get over some of that fear. I want you to go to our website, gotolaunchstreet.com, so G-O-T-O, launchstreet.com, and I want you to look at all the tools that we have to help you move into action. There's blogs, there's other podcasts. Oh my gosh, there's a toolkit that you can access as a member. Oh, there's so many great things on there. There's the assessment to help you understand how you innovate so that you're more prone to going into action. So go on there, get some tools, get into action. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. G-O-T-O, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.